All right, so we're good. So welcome to the Troubleshooting New Skype for Business Offerings. My name is Jason Collier. I'm located in sunny Seattle, where it never rains. I kind of felt at home last night here. I'm a customer engineering architect in the product group, so I work with customers on voice deployments in Skype for Business Online. Has anybody heard of Skype Operations Framework this week? Yay, so that's my team. If you have any compliments, you can compliment me, complaints. My good friend Brian in the front row, he takes the complaints. Yes. And I've got, been with Microsoft for 4 years, was on the beta team for the last 14, 15 months. I led that team and handed it over to Ricardo a couple months ago.
Yeah, I'm Ricardo Garcia, been in the beta team for about 6 months. And our team had the opportunity to work on things and problems that nobody ever blogged about or even completely documented. So we have sometimes to do some reverse engineering on our products, on our own products, to see what's going on, and then go to the devs and do the right questions. So that's it. Let's start.
Yeah, so one of the good things that Ricardo brought up is in beta, what we did was anytime we got a new product, we see the products probably about a year before you guys see them. We would reverse engineer the products, and the way we do that is through the logs. We would run through a scenario, see what's happening in the logs, and then determine what the application is doing. Fortunately, that was our job, so that's what we got to do every day, and that's how we learned the products. Honestly, we don't expect you guys to be able to sit there and spend, 10, 12 hours a day reverse engineering everything that Microsoft releases. So Ricardo and I came up with this idea of delivering this session here at Ignite. So our agenda, there's a method to the madness. I've been working in troubleshooting for, 10, 15 years, and you have to have a systematic approach to it, and we'll talk about that. We'll look at the Windows desktop client. Everybody's here running the Windows desktop client. You're not?
No.
Okay. So PSTN calling and PSTN conferencing in the cloud, anybody? Cool, there's a few hands up. The new Skype for Business for Mac client, anybody heard about it this week? Releases shortly next month. Yep, so we have a session this afternoon on the Mac client, so if you guys are interested, it's in C101. Two fairly decent, one really good presenter, one subpar presenter, so. Thanks for bringing me your Mac, Rich. So we'll talk about the Mac client, and I'm gonna kind of dovetail mobility in there because we're gonna show you a tool that we use internally, which is really cool, right? Hey, this tool makes it super simple, but you can't use it, right? So I put a link up there, you can download it, you can use it, and we'll talk about that. We'll give you a couple of different options for the Mac. The Mac client is built on what's known as UCWA, or Unified Communications Web API, and UCMP. Which is what our mobile clients are used on. So when you look at a mobile log and you look at a Mac log, they're interchangeable. So if you've supported iOS or Android, you're gonna understand and see what you're looking at. And then we'll open the floor up to questions and answers. So what I would ask on questions, if you have a question on something we're covering, feel free to go to one of the microphones in the middle of the room. If it's something we haven't yet covered, just wait, because we'll probably cover it. If not, we'll talk about it at the end.
Okay. So what this is not? This is not a debugging session. We are not opening here WinDBG and looking at stacks and things like that. We expect you to know a little bit about SIP, because a lot of things on the desktop client are SIP-based. So SIP is important. And it's good if you know how to use Fiddler. We will have a couple of slides showing some settings and configurations that you have to set up on Fiddler to check for Mac stuff. And it's good that if you know that, how to use it.
So anybody an all Mac shop in here?
No.
I saw all the hands go up in the room. No. Okay. So if you have Macs in your organization, we'll talk about that. And we do have solutions out there for you. So we'll talk a short bit about troubleshooting methodology.
Now, I'll
use the mouse. Okay. So how do we do this, right? So there's two different ways. The random approach, so that's the, let me pull five wires out, push five wires in, did anything change? Reboot the server not once, but twice. Now, We joke about that, but we were working an Android issue yesterday in the showcase. Couldn't figure it out. Ricardo rebooted the phone, didn't fix, and he was like, rebooted it again and worked. And I was like, we should probably hide that slide.
Yeah.
So a lot of the times what happens is you guys do some troubleshooting, you ask the user, can you try from internal, external, and then you end up calling support. When you call us at support, we already know what we're going to ask you for. We're going to come up with some structured questions to get some structured troubleshooting underway. And what that does is it helps us narrow down the scope or where those potential components are that have these problems. The key thing you want to do is investigate on the correct places. Now, true or false, Microsoft logs contain tons of false positive errors. True. Right? So that's why you need to focus on the issue. I've found before where I'm looking at a client trying to troubleshoot offline IM, and I'm like, oh, look, there's all these failures around audio devices, and then I start going down the rabbit hole. So you have to ask the right questions. Can you click it?
Sure.
So if, you know, user calls you and says, hey, I can't place calls, does that help you out? No, right? What do I want to know? What happened? Oh, I tried to place a call. I got an error message. Here's what the error message said, right? That helps me out so much, right? You know, I pick up my girlfriend. She calls me, and she's like, hey, I got an error on my phone. I'm like, what did it say? And she's like, I don't know. I clicked OK. Thanks, babe. So we need to know when. When did it happen, right? So you call support, and you're like, hey, I couldn't do this. Here's my 7 gigs of logs. Cool. When did that happen? Was it 8 p.m., 8 a.m.? What time zone are you in? Where? Were you on the corporate network? Were you on the internet? Who was affected?
At some time during that week.
Yeah, sometime during that week.
And I just pressed OK.
Yeah. So those error messages and symptoms, you know, you can go out to your favorite search engine. Everybody's using Bing, right? Because it's not Google.
Yeah.
So you go out there, search that error message. Tons of times that's already reported. Something we did in beta was we documented tons of error messages and KB articles out there. So classify the issue. Typically we find the areas in 3 different areas. So network, service, or client. So network could be a faulty device. We've been chasing an issue right now in audio quality. Anybody ever troubleshoot call quality? Super fun, right? Yeah. You know, we found Realtek audio driver build is bad, right? So you have to narrow down this issue. Is it a faulty device? Does it reproduce on multiple computers? Is it network congestion? I had a customer had tons of call quality issues whenever she was watching Netflix. Cool. Now, did she tell me that in the beginning? Nope. 1 month in. She's like, yeah, if I have Netflix playing while on mute or with the audio down, I'm having call quality issues. So. My favorite, anybody ever get this from support? What changed?
Nothing.
And that's the customer answer, nothing changed. Because you guys are like, oh, it didn't impact, that couldn't be related. And then 1 week later, they're like, well, we did do a checkpoint firewall upgrade and we enabled SIP intrusion detection.
Yeah, pretty common.
Oh, cool. So client, we'll talk about incorrect settings can be an issue, cached information, things like that. One of the other common things you get when you call us is we ask you, what version are you running? If you call support and you say, I'm having an issue with Link Server 2010 CU4, you're going to get a big sigh on the phone. Because we probably don't have a lab machine sitting next to us running that. We're going to go ask a friend, hey, do you got 2010 running anywhere? Drive to the resolution. So really 3 things, testing, validate, and apply the fix. So if I come up and I say, oh, it's got to be this setting, I don't go make the change on the server, you know, let CMS replicate it out and go home. You know, I want to make sure those changes worked because those, you know, morning reboots at 2 a.m. and the server doesn't boot up because you deleted, you know, tons of documents from CMS, you're going to have a problem. The other thing I would say is phased and controlled changes. I'm not a huge fan of when I'm working on an issue where I'm like, okay, let me change the server NIC, I'm going to change the IP address, I'm going to go update firewalls and redo DNS.
Don't forget to apply Windows updates.
Yeah, and then, and I got to apply Windows updates during that. And oh, by the way, one of them didn't apply, they have to roll back. So validate the fix and then share. Share the information. So in Microsoft, one of the things we do is we have a OneNote for that, right? So anytime we find something, we document it, we put it in a OneNote, and we share that information with each other.
Okay, let's go to the desktop client, put our hands on some good information. So we have more than these new features on the desktop client. We choose two of them to talk today. Video-based screen sharing and offline messaging. These two things enter on the client right now, but the client architecture stays the same. We're still using these 5 to 6 channels of communications that the client can use. So the SIP signaling channel to do your registration and all the SIP communication. HTTPS communication with front end and with Exchange, in this case with the front end, to grab information like address book or to join meetings. We have the HTTPS communication with Exchange that is used to grab your calendar. We have, of course, the direct media to when you call an user that's right next to you, you connect the media directly, and you have relay communication with Edge. The other thing that is not here, but the other communication channel that we have is the mapping connection from the client to Outlook, but we'll not touch that today. Okay, so log locations, still on the same place. We have the UCC API logs on this folder. That is local APP data, Office 16 link tracing. The files that we have there are UCC API log files that it's a plain text that is not very easily readable on a text editor. So we use Snooper for that. And we have the ETLs that are traces for everything that is happening inside the application. These ETL files, only us can read inside Microsoft, but they are basically useless without the UCC API log. Yeah, because
you don't have the
SIP information or the SIP stack inside this ETL log, so the logs works together. One thing that a lot of customers don't know about is that you can use Event Viewer also to check call problems, basically call establishment problems. When you enable the option to log on Event Viewer, you will see event logs on Windows Logs application that can contain a lot of good information to help you doing the troubleshooting.
Yeah, and if you take a look at that screen cap, this is kind of important. So this is actually an SDP. So I can see a call was trying to be established, what IP addresses were being used, what codecs were attempted to be used. That is hugely beneficial for troubleshooting call connectivity issues, candidate list negotiation, and things like that. The other thing I would say is the ETLs. Anybody in here using Skype Meeting Broadcast? So that would be one we would request if troubleshooting a Skype Meeting Broadcast producer issue would be ETLs. So I always ask my customers for both. Most times I can get you Cappy logs, we'll do it, but ETLs are good to have just in case you need them.
They help a lot. Alone, you can do nothing, but
yep.
You need additional them information. Yep. Good, so video basic screen sharing. In the beginning, the screen sharing, we have only RDP that is based on the remote desktop protocol. We can use only it over TCP, can achieve a maximum of 8 frames per second in no hard acceleration. Then we started with VBSS. We released it about 6 months ago, I would say.
Yep.
Or we have been testing like 6 months ago and released it.
Yeah, we've been testing and released at the same time.
So TCP or UDP, so we have more connectivity options for when we are using the VBSS. We have a much faster call setup. If you had a chance to see a VBSS session starting, it's much faster to start sharing your content. We can go up to 30 frames per second at 4 megabits, and we use H.264 protocol in hardware or software. So if you have a video card that is able to do a H.264 in hardware, we will use that.
So do you guys know why we brought VBSS around? So one of the common things that happens on conference calls, you know, Brian gets up, shares his desktop, and what does he say? Let me know when you can see my desktop, right? Because there was that 10, 15 seconds. So that's why we brought VBSS up, was to address those considerations, those concerns. Because you sharing your desktop, you want to see it quicker, faster.
Good. There are some fallback situations. So if you are doing a communication with an older client, if someone requests remote control, or the meeting is being recorded, or you can enforce that for using client policy. I will show you on the logs on the next slides how you can identify if a call is RDP or VBSS based, because there is no visual indication on your client that you can really say, okay, now we are running in VBSS, now we are running in RDP. So it's made to be transparent. But on the logs, we can see that. Okay, so here we are. When we are troubleshooting VBSS issues, the first thing to do is to identify the call. So asking the right questions to your end user, like when that happened, it will help you here. So when we finish every kind of media session on the client, we generate this service message that contains information that will be used on our monitoring server or in monitoring reports to say, hey, this call was good, this call was bad, I connected through this network segment, and so on. So all this information is inside this VQ report event, where you have this XML element that will have this information. So here what I'm doing is, first thing, identifying when the call started and when the call ended. So, and noting the call ID. So the call ID is you can use to see everything related to that call. So when you search for the call ID on the top of using Snooper, you'll be able to see all the SIP signaling, and in the end, the service message that is used to inform the server about the media quality. Okay, how we identify if the call is VBSS or RDP? On the SIP 2.0200 OK message, you will have RDP, you have an M application sharing in RDP, and then you have a candidate M video for VBSS. So when we establish the call, we establish with both protocols, but we'll be using only VBSS. And if someone requests the control, then we fall back to RDP. Not changing. Okay, took a while. Okay, other thing that you will see is that you will have candidates in TCP and candidates in UDP during the establishment of the call. So the UDP candidates will be used also for they will be used for the VBSS, and the TCP can be used for RDP or VBSS. This thing is not working. Okay, here we go. So some information that I would say that is very useful when doing your troubleshooting are under the outbound stream and in the payload elements inside this XML. So here I'm showing how to handle the raw data. So this is the thing that we look at when we need to do several tests on a lab environment, and we don't want to wait for this information to be uploaded to the server and do several clicks to refresh the reports and see that information on the report. So this is very valuable. So when you have to check something, you are doing small changes and validating what is going on in your environment, and you need to do several calls, and do the call and check, do the call and check, do the call and check. You don't want to do the call, go to your server, wait for that information to be available on your SQL report, and check on the report. So you can go directly to the log and see what's going on there. Okay, so we show you here a little bit of how RDP and VBSS behaves on a real world network,
yeah.
Right? So this thing was made to work on real networks, and real networks sometimes have packet loss. I'm not saying that you can leave your network with 10% packet loss.
Please don't.
Don't call support. Hey, I saw on Ignite that you now support 10% packet loss. So,
Ricardo.Garcia@Microsoft.com says you can run 10%.
No. So how we start this here? Okay, here we go. So here on the right, what we have is the sender. And on the left side, we have the receiver. So we are transmitting here in RDP with 10% packet loss using a network emulation toolkit. And the tool is dropping packets and adding some network latency. As you can see, we have about 8 seconds in difference from the things that I'm doing here on the right and what the user is receiving on the left. So this is basically what happens when we are on a really bad network using RDP. See, nothing move on the left. That's bad. And if you, and probably what you're doing here is talking about something very important and,
right.
And very visual.
You guys have been in those meetings, right? You see, I'm clicking here right now, and you tell the presenter, oh, wait, I'm still seeing your desktop. No, wait, I'm still seeing this.
Yeah. So this is like how this is how looks the data inside the logs, right? So on the good network, you will see some good network values here. So low jitter, low delay. And on the bad network, you will see an inter-arrival jitter, a high. And you can see the delay here in round trip is 750 milliseconds. We just added 250 milliseconds delay on this one. But because we are using TCP and we have retransmission, the time to have the tile sent from one machine to the other machine can vary a lot. So we have this huge round trip times and really bad quality. So you can see that incoming tile rate will drop from 18 tiles per second to about 6 tiles per second. That's really bad for content quality, right? So I made the same test using VBSS. So you can see no more than 2 seconds to have everything updated on the other side, even on 10% network.
Pretty noticeable difference, huh? So Ricardo and I have learned our lessons about the demo gods, so we recorded it because everybody knows demos go perfectly when you're working up here.
Good. So same test, different networks. You can see the values here. You can see that the inter-arrival, it's also huge. You can see the packet loss in 10%. You can see that the round trip, now we detect the round trip based on UDP because we're transmitting UDP. If we lost a packet or if we lost anything on the network, something bad happens when transmitting that, we just ignore and reconstruct the frame in the other side with some forward error correction algorithm. So, and you can see here on the video frame rate that we drop it from 15 to just 13. It's much better against the 0.8 frames per second that we are getting in RDP in the same situation. So, fallback. VBSS and RDP candidates, like I showed before. Look, this is a graph captured on Wireshark. In green, we have the session started using VBSS. We are using about 1.6 megabits per second for that session. In red, we have a fallback, so we move it from VBSS to RDP, and our network usage basically double over there. So you can see also these valleys on the graph. In the moments that we are not doing a lot of changes on our content, so if our content is static, we have some optimizations that are native on H.264 protocol. So,
one of the things to keep in mind is VBSS can use more bandwidth, So we did have an article on TechNet. Put your shocked face on. It was a little bit of a typo. Never happens, right? So we did say that VBSS always uses less bandwidth. Not always the case. Anybody in an engineering organization with CAD diagrams and 3D items? So you pop up a desktop share and you start pivoting, you know, a picture of a Ford F-150 in 3D AutoCAD, that bandwidth spike usage is going to occur with VBSS. So the way we tested in beta was actually quite funny, because the devs hated it. We tested playing YouTube videos.
Yeah.
We played a video inside of a desktop share, which does not work in RDP. Works in VBSS, don't get the audio, sometimes have some issues, obviously not the use case, but that was our easy way of testing VBSS. The other thing I would say is if you do have VBSS issues at your organization, the common thing I've been seeing is customers just disable VBSS. Probably not the right approach. You know, find out what video drivers are causing issues or what network drivers are causing issues.
Yep. And okay, so and finally just
hold on.
Okay, sorry.
Mike
stop fighting me.
No, so come here. Microsoft PowerPoint has stopped working.
Okay.
Yes.
Good.
So now we get to wing it. Hold on a second. So we're going to talk. Is it still running up there?
Yeah.
That's oh, good. We're checking online for a solution to the problem. Please wait.
Can you see my screen?
Yeah. Here, can you fix that and I'll talk?
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about offline messaging. Anybody know what offline messaging is? Yes, this is a stall, professional stall. Anybody using it yet? So offline messaging, next slide. Offline messaging was something we introduced.
Yeah, that works.
We introduced this a few builds ago, and the way we did this is we already have this really cool way of putting conversation history in the user's mailbox, right? We use something called the history spooler. We use the history spooler, which writes the messages locally to your desktop client and then uploads them to Exchange Web Services. So very cool feature, right? I log in the morning, I go to send Rich an IM, I double click on his name, I don't pay attention, and I send an IM and I say, hey, can I borrow your Mac? I left mine in my hotel room, right? Well, Rich wasn't logged in, it emails him. So the way that works is we write that to the history spooler folder on the user's desktop. We wait 50 seconds, because arbitrary numbers make sense in programmatic land, so we wait 50 seconds, and then we upload that message to Exchange. We upload it to the user's mailbox, and Exchange takes care of mailing it for us. So what I love about offline messaging, no server-side dependency. Anybody running 2010 servers? Woo-hoo. So like 7 of you are willing to raise your hands? All right, the others are like, nope, not telling you. So works there. Anybody in a regulated compliance world where IM auto-archiving is off? So that's the bad news currently. So we're dependent upon that, because we're dependent upon conversation history. So client-side only, no server updates required. Client attempts to send an offline message. We get the message back, or we attempt to send an IM. We get a message back that says the message could not be delivered. That's when we then write to that history spooler. So things in use are the SIP signaling. You're good. Yep. SIP signaling. I thought PowerPoint crashed again. I was like, oh, boy. It's going to start talking to you about Seattle. SIP signaling and then HTTPS communication with Exchange. EWS connectivity is paramount. If EWS isn't working, offline IM is not going to work. One of the first questions I would ask your users if offline IM is not working, hey, do you got conversation history? Nope. Oh, look at that. You know, so can't have one without the other. So here I've sent Rich a mail, or an IM rather, and I get that 200 status OK. So everything is working, the message goes through.
Cut, here we go.
All right, so then a different scenario, right? I go to send Amber a message, right? And I get a 480 unavailable SIP status code that she's offline. So I get that temporarily unavailable. The link client, the Skype for Business client, is then gonna write that message to the local history spooler folder on the user's machine. If you went and dug down into the history spooler folder and you saw a bunch of mail messages, that means we can't talk to EWS. You would see them all queued up there. So that's why that offline IM isn't working. So policy settings, again, enable IAM archiving. We're going to check that through PowerShell, so client policy. If you have users that move between those different policies, that's why offline IAM may be working or not working. And then is AWS successfully connected? So everybody knows about this configuration information screen. Hold control shift down, right click the Skype for Business icon. That wasn't bad, winged those slides while it was off.
Yeah.
So now I'm like gently touching the enter key.
Okay. Okay, let's talk a little bit about PSTN calling and conferencing and the things that we normally encounter over there and how we troubleshoot that. So PSTN calling is available in US, UK, now in Puerto Rico. A lot of more countries to come to all the regulations that we have to met to be a PSTN provider. So dial plans are different on each country. Dialing with a plus will bypass any dial plan. And users without enterprise voice that do not have the PSTN calling feature also have a dial plan. So that happens basically because you can use that feature call me at, and the user have to, it's user to dial on his own country, and he will use the dial plan of his own country. So on the calling troubleshooting, we have normally two moments to look at, or the call establishment, so if the call could really be completed, or connected and was disconnected in the initial 10 seconds, or call quality. So call quality, we have broken audio or echo, delay, and things like that. So here are the common calls that normally are related to each of these symptoms. So everything is related to the services. So it's a service problem, just call Microsoft and let's move on. So it's not like that. We all know that we can have network issues or client issues that are causing that. I'll show now some of the configurations that we have for the client. So when the client is configured for PSTN calling, the client have to be provisioned on the cloud. So these are the things that you can look at PowerShell for that user to see if the plan is assigned correctly. So you need the CPURI to do that, so to check the online user configuration. And on the logs, you need to use the column number to check that and the licensing plan status. These are the important things, the subscribe plan ID, the plan MCO and EV, that is the enterprise voice on the cloud, and the subscriber plan ID you have to see as enabled. So sometimes you configure the user on the portal. There are time for that replication to happen, and you don't have the user correctly provisioned. So checking on the PowerShell, you will see that. You can see also the dial plan of the user on the GetCS online user. There are comments that you can see also what is configured inside the dial plan to understand better the dialing. So there are countries where, in Brazil, for instance, we had to tweak the dial plans to make users more comfortable to do the dialing during the preview. So when we are doing the preview or tests with numbers in Brazil, we need to change this directly with the operations teams. Okay. CDR information is very useful for your troubleshooting, as you can see here in the bottom. The CDR information will contain the phone numbers and the caller IDs and also date and time of when the issue happened. So it's a good starting point. Then you go to the logs. So the buy message when we investigate a call completion issue will contain these MS diagnostic lines that looking on the way that it's formatted on the logs it's really bad. You can't see anything. So my suggestion is when analyzing these kind of messages, always paste this content on your favorite text editor and format it nicely so you can see things like the reason of the call connection being cutted here. For instance, is this call leg has been replaced. What happened in this call was we merged the call to another conference, and then you can see on the diagnostics message what happened to that call. Did that crash it again or not?
Nope.
Okay. This thing is okay. Just slow. Okay, and to investigate the media quality, we use the you can check directly on the XML on the quality report to see what happened on that client if you have the client logs. Sometimes you don't have a lot of details about the call, so doing the search for VQ report inside Snooper will give you a list of all the calls that were placed from that client. And then you can go manually and check for each of the calls to try to understand what happened with your communication session. So I just will show this slide here to so you can have an idea of how or resource forest works on the PSTN conferencing architecture. So when we have two forests for Skype for Business Online. One forest is the user forest where you have your registration happening. So when you sign in with your Skype for Business client, you will on Skype for Business Online, you register to a user forest. And when you are using PSTN resources, these PSTN resources have to be closer to the users, so close to the PSTN users, so you can have lower latency times and better connection. So when you're doing a conferencing or using resources from the PSTN, we are using things from a different resource forest, and for a conference, for instance, we will have two conferences cascaded between the MCUs. So troubleshooting an issue like that without having the exact time that things happen or how the things happen, it's really hard because you have to look at logs in different infrastructures. And in that, you can imagine the amount of logs that we generate in each of these infrastructures for one day. In logs here, I am meaning SIP stack logs and RS4 logs. That's a bunch of data. We had some problems with this, right?
Occasionally.
In the beginning, where we don't have dynamic conferencing IDs assigned to the users, and this signaling connection became established between the two MCUs, and you have that uninvited. Some of you have saw uninvited users on your conference lately.
Yeah. Anybody seen that? PSTN conferencing? Do you know it's fixed? Kind of. So we did issue a fix for that, so we have dynamic conference IDs. The reason, I'm going to give away a Jabra headset that Jabra forgot to bring us. Anybody can tell me what we call that failure? Not you. What do we call that failure when these two don't connect? Disappointing. Who said that? Come see me after you're getting a headset. He wins. So we call that internally a barbelling failure. Your users will report it as the craziest thing. VoIP users could hear VoIP users. PSTN users could hear PSTN users. We know immediately that's a barbelling failure because of this infrastructure design. And why does it happen? Tell them about the ellipses.
I don't know. Do you know?
I know.
Ah, okay, so go ahead.
All right, so we made the assumption that we recommend everybody end a meeting at the end of the meeting, that you'll go down, click those little ellipses, end meeting. Anybody ever done that? The six of you, we love you. I had to go find it, honestly, in the client. I was like, it's really there? You can end a meeting? So we enabled my book bag right there. That was close. That would have been a... That would have gone on YouTube, falling over. We enabled dynamic conference IDs on September 1st. We're rolling it out. Believe it or not, it's taken us a while to get 80 million tenants updated. So who knew that would take us a while to iterate through all of those? If you do have this uninvited guest issue, open a ticket, Office 365 portal, it's free, right? And say, I want to be enabled for dynamic conference IDs.
Yeah, we can expedite that.
Yeah. And we can move you to the front of the list. And the reason, because a lot of customers, it happened at our booth yesterday, one of the marketing guys is like, who is this uninvited guest? And why is his name uninvited guest? I'm like, well, you see, you know. So if you're having that issue, we fixed it. Apologies. You know, your users can either end the meeting or we can enable dynamic conference IDs. You can open a support ticket, get that fast-tracked.
Good.
And then that gives everybody their own separate meeting space. Why is that important? So my boss, my old boss, used to do reviews back to back to back, and I would try to be the good guy, show up 5 minutes early, and I would hear, you know, Ricardo's review, and, you know, my boss would be telling Ricardo, hey, just don't do what Jason does, you'll be fine, you'll go places now. So the question was, is this a tenant-wide or a user setting? And the answer is tenant-wide.
It's tenant-wide, yeah.
And honestly, I don't know why you wouldn't enable it. Now, the one caveat would be, So Contoso has this set up with non-dynamic conference IDs. Everybody goes out, they schedule a recurring meeting every morning for 7 a.m. We changed the dynamic conference IDs. We enabled dynamic conference IDs for the tenant. What do we need to do now? We got to update those meetings, right? So there's like three, there's probably like seven options, but there's three that are acceptable.
Okay.
Maybe two, maybe one. So three. So first is do nothing, right? Who's the admin that's like the do nothing guy? I was that. If you don't touch it, it doesn't break, right? No. So sometimes these problems can solve themselves organically, right? If there's not a ton of recurring meetings, all new meetings are created with dynamic IDs, the old ones phase off and the problem kind of organically solves itself. The other is the meeting migration tool, MMT. So the online customers, there was a handful back there, you guys have used that, right? It's a client-side tool, the end user runs, pops up, iterates through their calendar, sends a meeting update for all those calendar invites. Anybody like that idea? You give an end user a tool, they have to click through six screens. What happens?
No.
Your phone rings, right? Hey, can I share my desktop and walk through this with you? You're like, sure. Doesn't scale, 700 users, 1,000 users. The other is you can give your help desk a script to say, hey, go have the user cancel their meeting and reschedule it. We do have some stuff coming in the future to address that. I was waiting to find out if that's public or not, so I didn't get the no. So we'll be helping out in the future with that. So.
Good.
So uninvited guest, if we fix that for you, that was Jason, not Ricardo, that helped you out. So.
Yeah, it was.
And that guy right there, he's getting a headset. So Skype for Business for Mac, how many Mac users? Anybody got Mac users in here? Is it always the CEO? Yes.
Yeah, as always, yeah.
So what did Microsoft do? We had your back, right? We had Link for Mac out there. It rocked.
Did we?
Yeah, it was so good. So Link for Mac, let's talk about that really quick. We took a bunch of Windows developers and we gave them Xcode and we said, go write a Mac client. Can't be that hard, right?
Yeah.
It worked out well for us. So oops, our bad. So we do have the Mac client releasing next month. Skype for Business, written from the ground up. It was written by our Stockholm team. So these are the guys that wrote Skype for iOS, Skype for the Mac, Skype for Business on iOS. These guys are Mac users. You know, we would tell them, hey, it works like this on a Windows. And they're like, I don't care. I don't have Windows. So yeah. Those are the best guys to write your Mac client, right? So, hey, we wanted a mulligan, we screwed up, we got it, you know, elephant in the room, we're releasing a new one. So obviously, that introduces concerns. You folks with Mac users, do you have a Mac? Okay, you're lucky. So in beta, we supported Mac users without Macs, right? We had a few, but you can't really, you know, have everybody running around with a Mac client. So it has the same format as the iOS logs. So I'll do a reverse survey. If I get a hand up, I'll be shocked. Anybody got a Windows phone? Woo! So iOS phones in your organization? There we go. You've seen iOS logs, right? So the same exact thing you're going to see. There's a session today at 4 o'clock in C101 on the new Skype for Business for Mac client. Come see everything about it. One really good presenter there, so.
It's Richard.
His name is Richard. He's in the front row. He's got a Mac. It looks roughly like this one. So logs, logs, and more logs. So one of the first things is, where can I find the logs? So users folder, the tilde, you know, library containers, com.microsoft.skypeforbusiness. We keep two logs, SFB Mac log and SFB Mac.old.log. So which is the previous iteration. Anybody in tap and preview for Mac? Okay, anybody ever get a mail from me?
Only from you.
Probably Ricardo.
Yeah,
he doesn't sleep. So so those two log files contain everything about that session. So it's all of the connectivity to UCY, UCMP. We'll look at those here in a second. The other thing is the media files. So we write these HTrace files, which is the media information or the media stack. Again, Microsoft being super cool. This one's not human readable by you guys. It's only for us internally. So this would be, I'm having a persistent audio issue, media quality stinks, my network is perfect, everything is perfect, I've looked at the VQ report. Now we're looking, is this possibly, you know, an issue with speaker X or speaker Y in the device, things like that. So clearing logs and cache files. So there is an occasion or two we've seen in support where the Mac client caches old information or information is stale. Now, ideally, this is going to be not an issue for you, but we're sharing this right here. So what I would do is I'm super lazy when it comes to troubleshooting, right? So when I have an issue, I ask the user for a brand new clean log file, right? I don't want 180 meg log file. Delete everything, start the client up, reproduce the issue, and give me the log. You give me a 5 meg log, I'm going to open it and scan it a lot quicker, find the issue versus that scroll bar, right? So what we recommend, you run these commands in terminal. So rm is remove. We're removing all these files, so basically cleaning up everything on the Mac, and then we're going to do a full capture. So I like to get everything. So what's the worst that happens with support is, you know, I call Eric and I say, hey, you've got an edge issue. Run SIPStack logging and reproduce the issue, and you've got 8 edge servers, right? He reproduces it, he comes back, gives me the logs, and I'm like, cool, let's redo that again. But SIPStack S4, ever happened to you guys? Yeah. No. And then what do? We come back a third time, we're like, we would really love some network captures of this issue happening, right? So now you're on your third. So I'm a huge fan of requesting everything at once. The customer gives it all to me, I don't have to go back, and I just send you an update that I'm working on it. So close the client, remove the cache files above, start a network capture, so I can do a sudo TCP dump. I can do a PCAP, so I'm capturing it to a network capture file. If my laptop was up here, I would have like that IT guy video. You guys remember that? Sales versus IT guy, 800 icons on the desktop. I relive that, so if you've not seen that video, highly recommend it.
Yeah.
So clear the DNS cache. Again, if you've updated DNS records, that's another one. The Mac client being based on mobility, we require DNS to be configured properly at your environment. That's a good caveat.
Yeah,
properly.
And the idea here is to clear the DNS cache after you're starting the capture, so we can see the DNS queries on your capture, and do the same for the CRL cache.
Yep.
For grab all the CRL information, so all the certificates and validations of certificate revocation lists. to be there on your logs as well, on your capture, on network capture as well.
We do have a weird dependency on the Mac client. The CRIL, the certificate revocation list, does have to be accessible if it's published. So if you're publishing it on, say, what was it, an LDAP server, I think was
the name? If you have only on LDAP, the Mac will not be able to trust the certificate.
Yeah, so if you have your CRIL published and it's on an LDAP server, and it has to be accessible via web services, so.
Yeah, so and the default configuration of our CA does not contain an HTTP publication point, so you always, if you just install Windows, bring the certification authority role up, you will not be able to have your Mac trusting the certificates that you should issue with that CA. Then we stop the capture, run the system profile. Normally, the system profiler information, system profiler is a small application that you have inside every Mac that will give you all the hardware information and software information that you have on the machine, and then collect the files. You have on some slide the files that are to be collected?
Yep.
Okay. There is it. Yeah.
Yeah, so here's the big three or four files that we would want and support. You know, the network capture, the logs, the link web app tracing. So we have what's called the join launcher inside the browser, which helps us join a meeting. We would want to capture those if we're troubleshooting anything there, as well as the media files.
A live troubleshooting session.
Yeah, we're about to do a live troubleshooting session if Rich is doesn't get his... What? Why'd you stop that? Hit login. So, anybody in here use Fiddler? Sweet, awesome.
That's good.
Anybody use Charles? So Charles is it's basically Fiddler for the Mac. Fiddler's free or free-ish, free pay. Anybody ever paid for Fiddler? Anybody ever paid for WinZip?
Yeah.
All right. I'm still curious. How are they alive?
I mean, yeah, that's okay. So
Fiddler, capture all the HTTPS traffic. Please pay for WinZip. I don't work there. Don't have stock. So I know why. Can you join the wireless network from his laptop?
Sure.
Yeah. So Fiddler, I'm trying to sign in over here. I'm like, Ricardo, it won't sign in. I don't know what's going on. Not even on the network. So remember that slide, check the network? I got it. So Fiddler is an HTTPS tool you can use to capture web traffic. Obviously, you're probably all PC users, so what I like to do, I install Fiddler on my PC and I kind of set it up as a proxy, so it lets users connect to it. This was common when we would troubleshoot Windows Phone issue. We would have the Windows Phone use the desktop as a proxy, capture all that web traffic going through there. So I enable Fiddler on the PC. I install the Fiddler root CA on the Mac. And you can do that from the HTTP, whack, the PC address. And then ports are :8888. So please trust this certificate that says, do not trust this certificate. Trust me, you'll be fine. You need to configure your network proxy settings on the Mac. You know, Rich trusted us. He gave us his Mac client. Now it's logged in. I see his boss is now signing in to send him an IM, so it's going to pop up here. So the Mac settings, you want to set up your proxy, which is going to tell the Mac client connect to the Windows PC for web traffic. And then if you need to determine what your IP address is that Fiddler's listening to, you can see that up there in the, you hover over the online and you'll get the IP address. So anybody in here ever use Snooper? Okay, so Snooper is our client for, did anybody look at that slide? Dang it. Pretend. I had a great question. So can I use Snooper to read mobility logs? You guys cheated. This is the worst. They read the slide. Dang it.
Yeah.
So I've, you know, been doing support, been working with the product since LCS 2005. About a year ago, I saw somebody open a mobile log with Snooper, and I was like, shut the front door. Did you just do that? That is so cool. So I've been using text editor and text analysis tool for mobile logs. So Ricardo wasn't big on sharing that information with me. So hey, by the way, guess what? You can use Snooper to read server logs, desktop logs, and mobility logs. This build, which is not yet out, 1168.1, is the first build that will now let you read Mac logs. So I can open every client log we have out there. It should be released timed with the Mac release, so sometime next month we'll have an update for Snooper. Correct. And there's a bunch of media perf issue log parsing perf fixes in there too, right?
Yes.
So, and Rich would have been getting that release today, except for somebody called him frantically to borrow his laptop this morning. So, don't know how that happened. So here's a look at SFB Mac logs. So you can see up there, where do I store all my files? On the desktop. Highly recommended. Easy to find all your files. So I can see the status messages, I can see the sign-in, the web tickets. Again, we're a mobility-like application, so we leverage UCWA, Unified Communications Web API. So you can see those URL requests down there. It's like webdir.online.link.com, so that's me signing into online. You can see the UCWA connections going through with a status code of 200.
Yeah, just return one slide.
You sure?
Yeah.
Just one?
Just one.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. So one thing that is nice here is when you are looking at the logs on a text file, some things are happening not on a synchronous form, but asynchronous. So you do a GET to a server to request some information. And the server will return you this after a couple of seconds. In the mobility, we do a post to the server and keep that post open for, I think, 38 seconds.
Yeah.
When the server has something to tell you back, he uses that communication channel that is open to give you the message back. So on the logs, what is important when you're looking at the logs is this call ID. So you have the request ID. That is the HTTP request that was made to the server, and you will see the response. Sometimes you will see the GET in the top of the log and the response 30 or 40 seconds later, and it's really difficult to see that on a text file. So that is where Snooper helps you a lot, because you just go selecting the message and you can see the related request highlighted in yellow.
Yeah, and so to put that into context, when we sign in on the Mac client, we do four web requests. So
that's
I'm signing as
GETs in
GETs.
The top.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm signing in as jason@microsoft.com, right? So we do a http://linkdiscover.microsoft.com, linkdiscoverinternal.microsoft.com. We also do two HTTPSs of those same requests. So that log is going to have all four of those requests in it.
Happening simultaneously.
Right. So all four are out there happening. All four are getting responses. And we continue with all four requests and all the way till we get that auto-discover response document back. So you can right-click, find related messages. If you click, you highlight, you get the request. You can see that's kind of up here. I don't know if the pointer is showing on the screen. There's four link discover requests. I've seen some weirdness in some customer environments where the HTTP response takes 20 seconds, but the SSL response is like a half a second. So
yeah,
it can be somewhat problematic to follow those logs and find the related messages. So messages tab, again, the messages tab, or the traces tab, sorry, can give you more information. So HTTP connections, if the request cannot be completed, that's, you know, the DNS entry isn't valid. If you search the text files, anybody use text editors and not Snooper? Anybody use text analysis tool in here? Wow. Okay, got one. Is that free? Pay for it.
Good.
You can create your custom filters in there. So Ricardo's a little obsessive compulsive. If you go by his six monitor setup, he has Snooper, Sublime. Anybody heard of Sublime? Yay. Sublime, text analysis tool, and then he's got Notepad.
And a script to open every .log file on three applications at the same time. So
yeah,
makes
if you do something, you click three times, Ricardo scripts it. So
yeah.
So we're going to talk about Sublime really quick, and I'm going to try to pull off a demo here. So Sublime is a text editor. It's free. I think you're supposed to purchase it, but it's free. Might be related to Wednesday.
Yeah, you have you can register and support the devs. So.
Okay. Support the devs. They're nice guys. So what we're giving away today, UCMP parsers. So if you look at that URL, aka.ms/UCMP parsers. These are parsers that are going to parse our log files and format them in Sublime. Yay, rejoicing. It was pretty lackluster. Yeah. Hold on, let's try one more time.
Okay.
Hey, we're giving away some UCMP parsers to parse the Mac logs.
Thanks.
Session's over, everybody gets free water. About time. So that's what we use kind of primarily. So there's four files in that zip. You're going to extract them down to the package's SFB zip folder. What you do is you launch Sublime. Now, what's cool about Sublime, runs on the Mac, runs on Windows. So if you're an all Mac shop, you're Apple, and you're using Skype for Business. Wouldn't that be fun? So you're Apple, right? You can use your Mac machine to support your Mac users, read your Mac logs. So it formats the logs. You take selection format, SFB log, does some XML indentations. We change the syntax to UCMP from the menu option. Was it 7? Yes.
Here it is.
Hey, so 7. So here's what it looks like. So, you know, log files are super exciting, right? This always gets top survey. Jason opened a log file in the session. It's so sexy looking. So this is application errors are highlighted in pink or fuchsia, depending upon whether or not you're color challenged like me. On the right here is a little nice, super simple scroll window where we can see everything going on.
Go more to the left, huh? A lot of mails here.
Yeah, you've got a lot of contacts on your contact list there, Rich. So you can scroll through the log. You can look for the fuchsia or the errors. If you're a Notepad guy and you don't want to color code, Notepad girl, you don't want to color code, you just search for application error. But this gives you the full kind of syntax view of the client. You know, I always tell the new support engineers we hire, look for the errors, look for the pink, go find out what's there. That line I stopped on, which I don't know how I could have pulled that off again, is an XML response. I could take that back and paste that into an XML editor or install IndentX, which is an XML parser for Sublime. And it lets me see everything like the in-band provisioning settings in the client. You know, that configuration information screen, all these policies that come down during sign-on. So here is the Skype for Business for Mac client. And Ricardo, where'd we hide it?
Collect logs?
So anybody love this button? The collect logs, right? Ever ask your users to go to the folders to find it? Who loves this button?
Yeah, it's a good thing.
I made this.
Yeah.
You know, I love talking to the users. Go to your users directory. I'm not a user. Yes, you are. No. So we added that. Super cool. If I press this button, it generates a zip. Puts it in the downloads folder. You tell the user, grab the zip file from your downloads folder. I was like, please don't have anything in there, Rich. Did you see Rich? Ooh. He was like this. I did close monster.com earlier for him, so.
So
definitely download. I don't know what's going on with the drivers.
No, disconnector here, probably.
Yeah. So definitely download those parsers. They work for iOS, so mobility logs make it super easier. Anybody ever used what's the tool? Link Connectivity Analyzer. You save the logs. It even parses that. How cool is that? That was an accident. We didn't expect that to happen. True story. So hey, win a Skype room system. So this is the marketing slide. So this is the guys that are paying for our travel, so we got to say this. But no, check out the new Link Room system. Sorry, Skype Room system. You can go win one of these. There's some at the booth in the expo hall, which is booth 1818 is the Logitech booth, and then ours is 111. Also, and by the way, Ricardo will find this out just as you did. So we have this new community out there, Skype for Business community. Ricardo is one of our new subject matter experts that'll be moderating the community.
Oh, good.
Yeah, hey, by the way.
Thanks.
You're welcome. So make sure you join this. You can go out there, aka.ms/sfbcommunity. Since you guys saw his SIP address in every slide, I'm pretty sure you could just send him an IM then instead of posting it.
Yeah.
I keep hitting enter on the wrong keyboard.
Jasko@microsoft.com.
Oh, you went there. he didn't say that right. That's okay. Not my email address.
No, okay. It's not.
Wow. So questions for us. We have one over here on the mic. So this is not Stump the Chump at 10 a.m. You know, so no, I'm kidding. You can stump him. I'll be fine.
I hope this is not the first time you're hearing this, but the Mac client, LBR support.
Location-based routing?
Yes.
And we have the program manager here.
So about that first time thing. No, so what I would say is we have a 4 o'clock session on it. This is what I'm going to call, hold on. So come see me afterwards. I'll give you my email address. We'll follow up on it. I know we have a ton of discussions around those topics, so you win. But he got the headset over there. I'm sorry. So yeah, see me after the session. And what I'll do is I'll introduce you to Rich. I'll give you his laptop, and then you know he'll get you an answer.
I'll have to answer it
again. Yeah.
One more question.
So does the RDP use the same ports as the VBSs? I mean, for the quality of service configuration in the environment, do we need to change anything between
for the media port
and the application sharing ports? Is it any different?
We use the media ports. They are defined on our configuration, and we'll be using more ports now because we are using UDP as well. So if you have a really strict environment where you are limiting the port usage, you have to release the UDP ports as well on the application sharing range.
Okay. Right. And is there any plan to add some kind of an indicator in the Skype client that will easily tell us whether it's a VBSS or RDP?
Yeah, I'll speak bluntly. So Skype consumer shows codec information and things like that. We tried to push for that for the Skype for Business client. We did some mock-ups. It really didn't seem actionable to say this is RDP versus VBSS. So it's something we'll probably look at in the future, is giving, you know, a control shift click hidden menu to say here's the protocols, codecs, things like that being used. But we didn't get it in for the 2016 client. Unfortunately, I failed you, came up with the idea very late in the game. Actually, a customer did, so if you work there. But no, we came up with that, but at the point, the 2016 client had already been code complete and was in escrow. We do have a session tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. on the Windows 2016 client, so if you guys want to stop by. C101.
Yep.
One good, one bad presenter.
Yeah.
Again. All right, go ahead.
VBSS seems pretty dependent on having the latest drivers. Getting a lot of mouse trail, even with the latest drivers and all the hardware, that seems to be a problem. I don't want to disable it. Is there any plans to make that less driver dependent?
Yes, so the question is, VBSS seems to be very driver dependent. And he's my new best friend because he doesn't want to disable it. He wants to fix it. So I think the short answer is there's a ton of effort being placed to improve VBSS. The problem we're having is there's a couple blog articles out there that say, here's how to disable VBSS. What happens is customers disable it. We don't know about those driver issues, and we can't address them. You know, I'll give you a scenario. There was an issue with Excel and pivot tables causing VBSS to crash. Customer had it. They disabled it, and they moved on. 3 customers later, I found out about this, got in front of the dev's eyes, and they fixed it within 10 minutes. Now, obviously, you don't get the fix in 10 minutes, apologies, but what I would say, open a case with support, ETLs and UCAPI logs, and then system information, which drivers are causing it, and then we'll get it fixed. You know, but
if you can repro that on some specific driver, go ahead, scale it to us.
Yeah. You know, a scenario we had was there was, and I'm going to make the model number up, but like HP Pro Elite 870G, is that you?
Shoot. No, it wasn't me, but you got a lot of HP.
Right. So we were like, oh, so we started emailing everybody. Anyway, I got this laptop. And we're like, nope. I'm like, all right, let's go buy one. right? So that's our commitment. We got to fix it. If we know about it, we'll fix it. You know, and open a support case, and the support engineer should never tell you to disable it. So if they do, email Ricardo.
Yeah.
And then he'll forward it to me and be like, I hate you. But no, we'll push for that for you. The other thing is we have tap and preview programs. Great opportunity for these large organizations to get in there, vet the solutions before they release. Anybody a tap preview customer in here? Yeah, so hopefully Ricardo and I supported you well, or at least Ricardo.
Yeah.
Other question?
Yeah, so if we do call support, is the first answer going to be upgrade the driver, because that's going to be another part of the problem? Do we have specific drivers
that we test? So what I would say, I was a Microsoft customer before, and I was very I was very difficult, and I would say, nope, this is the certified driver we have for this device, and this is what the vendor recommends. I need you to fix it for this. So, you know, stand your ground-ish. But, I mean, if you come to us and you say, I'm running Windows XP on unsupported OS, on unsupported hardware, we're probably going to say, nope, time to upgrade.
That's not my choice.
Yeah, I know. You love supporting Windows 7, right? but and the fact is we're always going to be on the latest OSs, typically at Microsoft. And so that's where what happens is, you know, when we tell you make sure you're running Windows 10 fully patched, because that's where most of the devs are going to be, where most of our labs are going to be. We do version testing and regression testing, but be where the most user base is. The way I like to say is, and who's the largest? The federal government, right? Be where the federal government is, right? You got 400,000 users out there testing. Be where, you know, Acme Corp is. They've got 600,000 users. Any other questions? Yes, sir. Tap, so go to skypepreview.com. You can check out all the Tap preview programs. Mac client ships in a few weeks. So there's a theater session at 12 o'clock from Miru, who bought me my Mac and shipped it to me for me to forget it in my hotel room. So please attend his session and tell him he's the greatest guy ever. Hi, Miru. You look nice today. Will the video playback ever support audio? Probably not. So desktop sharing, you know, you want to share a video. What I use is an HDMI device. There's a couple out there. There's one called a Magewell is what I travel with. You can use that to take desktop share from one PC into another or a Mac. Great for use with Skype meeting broadcast. It's typically an OS limitation. There is a product called Virtual Audio Cable that I think will do that. So. And I think you have to buy that one, right? Virtual audio cable?
Yeah.
That one you're going to have to pay the $7 for, so get the corporate card out.
Good.
You can get Ricardo to buy it for you. Yes, sir.
iOS 10
So iOS 10, super stable, huh? You love that little spinning wheel every time it crashes? Oh, this guy in the far corner. So Jabra guy showed up. This first guy. Right there with a laptop. So iOS 10, Rich, the fix is live, but meeting join is not yet fixed. So meeting join is fixed in the online offerings. There's going to be a cumulative update for on-prem customers to fix meeting join. So that bit us right at when iOS 10 shipped. We didn't see it in the betas. So, and if you want to dig further on that, Rich or Rich can answer that.
Okay.
In the back?
Is the new Mac client
VBSS based? Come to the 4 o'clock session. No, not yet.
Not yet.
You have a conflict? Cancel the other one. Come on. Dude, I tried to get on the app and cancel my 9 o'clock, and it was like, no, you're the speaker. I'm like, darn. No, so VBSS will come in a cumulative update shortly after release. So it's not in the RTM version. No, so those are back, what we call the backwards, downward that. So no, to answer your question.
Compatible?
But if they join a meeting, like a Surface is VBSS capable, is not VBSS capable, it'll force the meeting back. If I join from the Link for Mac, Skype for Business for Mac, Link 2010, 2013, and the web app. Also another way to fall back from VBSS to RDP, anybody know? Request control, what's an easier one? Which freaks everybody out. No, don't disable it. That, security. Yeah, start recording. Recording will make it fall back to RDP. So when you're in a meeting and it's if it's blurry and you need to see that high fidelity, so.
If you release control, does it switch back to VBS?
No.
No. So the question is, if I release control or don't do anything, once we fall back to RDP, we never go back up. One of the other things you'll do is anybody really network savvy, Wireshark, you know, I want to see everything the client's doing. We actually maintain RDP signaling through the whole session. Wow, if you're coming to the 9 o'clock session tomorrow morning, you'll hear this slide. So we keep RDP signaling always in the session. So if we have to fall back, you don't have that 10-second delay. So, yes, sir. I didn't hear the question. Is the question export the contacts? No, so export from regular Skype and import to Skype for Business? No, you know, screen cap, put them side by side, you know. Yeah, so there is no solution. Two totally different platforms, different content, different structure. Any other questions? We're getting the girl back there waving the sign, flashing the light. She's holding a lighter up in the comedy club. Yes. So offline messaging to work, what version of Exchange? As long as conversation history works, you're fine. I saw it working with Exchange 2007, SP1. Not supported, but I've seen it working with older versions. Brian's saying Exchange 5.5 up here, so I've never even heard of that. Ricardo was in middle school at that point. No, I'm kidding. I'm not dating you. Say again?
Thanks, everyone.
Yeah, so.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, everybody. You are my new best friends, all 511 of you. I'll send you my birthday party invitation. Jazzy, how are you? Yeah. What's that? Oh, Ken. Holy heck. How are you, man? Yeah, Eric Ryan right over here up in the front row. Eric. Ken Brewer. Yeah. He was on the Accenture team, right?
I don't know what the hell team I was going back there.
Yeah.
Support.
Yes, Rich, right here. So I gotta say it's gonna be fine, but.
Because already what we've got is we've got a huge US population that's on Mac and Linux, right?
Right.
We have a lot of India population that hates Skype because they can't use anything on their cell phone because we've dumped the cell phones down so I'm in presence. Because they don't pass ID addresses. I cannot LBR certify. So
definitely talk to Rich.
Okay.
And what we'll probably do is want to get the client with you quickly and find out if it's an issue.
Okay.
If it is, it's going to be probably fixed in a CU right maybe a month or two, but we'll talk about it.